Hello, podcast world. Welcome to the Strong Body, Stronger Mind podcast. If you are new here, my name is Celeste Barker, and I'm here with Chelsea Stewart.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about bodybuilding prep. And this is going to be episode one of a series that we don't know how long it's going to be because this is a very, a very big topic, honestly. And there's just a lot of nuances to cover. But we're very excited about this as both of us have competed before. Both of us are getting into prepping our own athletes. We are on a competition prep team. So we have some insights both from personal experience and just, you know, being in this world for not like a long time, but we're by no means experts on competition prep, but we know some things and we thought it would be fun to share those things with you all.
Yeah. So the topic kind of came up a lot recently because Celeste is currently in prep for her show. How long have you been prepping now? Do you even know?
I think it's been like 25 weeks now.
Okay, so Celeste has been in prep for a hot minute, and I just had a client compete this past weekend. So with both of us, you know, just being kind of more so in this world than we usually are, lots of questions have been arising. So we wanted to cover, like Celeste said, we have quite a few topics, so this will be a series. Otherwise, this would be a four-hour podcast. But just for your future reference, topics that we do want to talk about. And if you guys have anything else you really want us to cover, please let us know and we'd love to cover it. But today we're just going to kind of talk about like a general overview. What is prep? What are the different divisions? You know, what kind of goes into competing at the surface level? We'll also have an entirely separate podcast of like how to know if you're ready to prep. That's a really, really big one. Mm-hmm. Kind of talking about the coach and competitor, two different perspectives and relationship. Another one talking about peak week and another one talking about post show. So there's a lot of topics here, but like I said, today, we're really just going to kind of cover the general surface level. What the heck even is contest prep? What is competing? What goes into that?
Yeah. So contest prep, you are preparing for a contest. So there it is. There's the podcast. Just kidding.
Goodbye.
but in an essence, you are getting your body ready to be on stage with a bunch of other competitors, and you are going to be in front of a panel of judges, and you are being judged on your physique. And the criteria of the judging is going to depend on the different divisions, which again, we're going to talk about here in a minute. But basically, it is a very extreme form of dieting. The goal is to get your body as lean as possible for your division while maintaining a decent amount of muscle mass. So again, the leanness and muscle density that is required is going to depend on the different divisions. So mm-hmm. You can just jump right into that because it's kind of hard to explain the prep.
It definitely is. Yeah. I mean, I think that generally speaking, you described it pretty well. You know, the level of leanness, regardless of what division you go to, is going to be a level further than anyone who's not competing should ever go. You know, there's this big stigma that like bikini lean isn't, or not stigma, but misconception that bikini lean isn't unhealthy. I think we've all of us coaches have had like the inquiries where people are asking to, you know, prep and get bikini competitor lean without actually competing. And the fact of the matter is even in bikini, which, you know, that is, as we'll discuss in just a minute, it is going to be the least shredded version, the least shredded division, the people with the most body fat. The level of body fat that you end up having when you step on stage as a bikini competitor is not healthy. Mm-hmm. So any division that you're in, that's not a healthy goal if you don't plan on competing. But we can kind of talk about the different divisions. So, you know, we'll obviously predominantly focus on women because I think most of our listeners are females, but for women, you know, the, I guess a fitness would actually be probably the division that needs the least amount of leanness, or
I would say it's like not so much leanness, but like muscle density, even though those, the fitness at the pro level, those women are freaking jacked, man.
Well, they have to be with what they do.
Push-ups and like, that's wild. But so kind of not in like any particular order, but there is the fitness division, bikini division, wellness division, figure division, women's physique, and then women's bodybuilding. So in total, that's what, six? Yeah, I can count. Six divisions.
Yeah, I can.
Women. Most popular, I would say, that, you know, is seen a lot on social media and things like that is women's bikini. Yes.
And if you go to a show, there will be more like, bikini competitors than any other division, almost guaranteed.
Yeah. So within each division for women outside of women's bodybuilding, it is going to be divided up by classes. Is fitness divided by classes as well, by height?
So the thing with fitness is that because fitness is kind of more so making a comeback lately, fitness kind of disappeared a little bit. There's not a ton of fitness competitors, at least at like the amateur level. I think a lot of times there's just not enough competitors to even divide it into classes. Yeah. So, you know, obviously if there's only five competitors across the board, there's no sense in them making classes. But if they did have classes, I would assume, I'm not really that well-versed in fitness, but I would assume it would be height.
Yeah. So majority of the divisions are going to be divided up by height. So it's like class A is going to be the shortest, and then it can go all the way up, especially at the national level, can go up to like class, like what's the alphabet? Like
G. I've seen E.
Yeah.
I've seen F. Ashley.
I was
in class F once.
I was class F at USA. Yeah. So, and that was for figure, and there's usually less figure competitors than figure competitors. So,
so it kind of keeps going up until they have to. Generally speaking, you know, classes, again, it just depends on how many people show up. There could be anywhere from 3 people in your class to, you know, 15 people in your class. But I feel like at least from the shows I've been to, it tends to average out about, you know, 10 is like a max.
Yeah. At the regional
level. Amateur level. Yeah. Regional level.
At the national level, it's going to be a lot more competitors.
A lot bigger.
It'll be a bit more dicey when it comes to those people who are like at the borderline of like class B versus class A. So if they have too many people in class A, they might bump you up to class B. So that is something to keep in mind. But going back into the specific divisions, like we said, we're not super well versed in the fitness division, seeing as it is, it's been around for a while. Here before bikini was. It was like originally just like fitness and figure, I believe. That I could be totally wrong, but with the fitness division, it is kind of like a bikini physique, but you are also going to be judged on a routine that involves like different gymnastics types of deals. Like there's like a push-up, a high kick, a side split type of deal. So that's like the division where you see them wearing the super cool, not like decked out, but the super, they're not wearing bikinis. They're usually wearing like,
like cute little outfits. They remind me
like
of like the rave type clothing that you would get. Fitness is really cool though. Yeah. They have like specific skills that they have to do. I know one is a push-up one. I honestly don't know what they are. I just tried to look them up. Probably should have prepared a little bit for that.
I have it right here. It's push-up, okay. High kick, straddle hold, side split.
There you go. So they have to do those, but then they get to choreograph their own routine to their own music and they get to pick their own outfit. And a lot of times they'll do like a theme, you know, around there. So it's really cool. It's actually, my friend Nicole is going to be competing in the fitness division this coming weekend. I'm so excited to watch it. Like, it's like watching like the cheerleading competitions or dance competitions. I always found that to be so entertaining. Whereas like bikini, figure, a lot of these other divisions, like every single competitor goes out, does the same poses and leaves. It can get very repetitive from an audience standpoint.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I'm excited for her.
Yeah. It's going to be really, really cool to see, but yeah, fitness is really cool. And I really do hope that it continues to come back. Because I honestly think, again, from like an audience standpoint, it will draw more people to wanting to go watch bodybuilding shows, you know?
Yeah. So moving into bikini, I think bikini is just a very much about shape and symmetry. So you gotta be as muscular up top as you are at the bottom. You can't have like one muscle group overpowering another, especially with the addition of the wellness division, which we'll get into in just a minute. But bikini is gonna be a lot of delts, a lot of glutes, some lats, tiny waist.
It's a lot about shape. Yeah. Tiny waist and anything that can make that waist look tinier. You know, how many times have you heard or seen like the Instagram posts of ladies train your back because it makes your waist look tinier, you know? I feel like bikini has so much popularity because the bikini physique is kind of like that stereotypical physique that a lot of women are reaching for and trying to achieve. It's like the built hourglass figure in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
The level of leanness, like I said before, it's still not really a healthy level of leanness, but it's not, you know, you don't want to see like those striations where you can see like the separate lines of the muscles and the feathering of the muscles. You don't want to be to that point, but you do want to have, you know, low enough body fat percentage that you are seeing your cuts, you know, you're seeing the
glutes, the glute hamstrings.
Yeah. You want to see the shape of the muscle.
And bikini is also very, very much, I feel like all of the, you know, divisions are, but very, very much about your presentation, your posing, your suit, your makeup, your hair, all of those things do come together. You can have the best physique ever, but if you don't know how to pose, you can lose to somebody who has a worse physique than you and poses better.
Yeah, that's so true. And like you said, that's across the board with all the divisions, but I do think there's a little bit more of an emphasis on like the sass and the overall look, like what your hair looks like. And, you know, I don't want to say it's like a beauty pageant, but like you do have to present yourself in a very like, you know, confident manner.
Yeah. And then moving away from bikini, we go into figure, which is my division. So I am slightly biased.
Well, I think figure is awesome, but there's no way I could build that kind of muscle. It's hard for me to even build enough muscle for bikini. So one little side note about bikini is not an unmuscular division, guys. So all y'all who think that bikini competitors don't have muscle, that's just not true at all. They have a lot of muscle.
Yeah. And we'll get into like that part when we talk about how to know if you are ready to compete, because a big, big criteria is having the, you know, training background and muscle density to actually, you know, have muscle to show when you get that lean. Because as you diet down, you'll notice that you have less muscle than you think you do. The figure division is going to be like one step up in terms of muscularity than bikini. It's still about shape. It's still about symmetry. Figure is going to be a big emphasis on back development, big emphasis on quad development. It's going to be like that X frame where you have, you know, the wide shoulders, V taper, then glutes, quads, legs, etc. Leanness is it's at the regional level versus the national level. I feel like national level, you do have to have like that extra little bit of leanness.
I feel like that's pretty true across the board too, of all divisions, that regional level is going to be more body fat is allowed, or you can get away with it, than at the national level. And then the pro level will be even more diced.
Yeah, but kind of like a misconception with figure is that you have to be super, super jacked. But, well, yes, you do have to have a decent amount of muscle. It is also a lot just about shape. And that's something that I've learned, because I'm, you know, not the biggest person walking around town. But I do have decent shape. And that, I think, can get you some more points, again, if you know how to present it well. With figure, there are going to be mandatory poses. So we can kind of touch upon like how shows are run, but with figure, you have when you're doing your comparisons, they do have you do quarter turns. So they have these mandatory poses, but then you also have your own personal routine that you do during the routine portion. And that is when you can add a little bit more flair and things like that. But it's a little less sassy than bikini. You can still add in your own like flair, flavor, your own personality. But there are going to be just more mandatory poses. The back pose is different than the bikini back pose. With bikini, you aren't showing off your back in your back pose. With figure, you are.
So something to note there is that with bikini, you actually can get points taken off for your back being too built up, which is why I get a lot of questions about like why bikini girls hide their back with their hair. You know, why don't they push it out of their way? I know a lot of us, myself included, like we love our back muscles. We're so proud of them. But that is actually not really, they want the width in order to create that shape. Mm-hmm. But as far as like having super dense back muscles, that's actually not really what they want. So a lot of bikini girls will kind of cover their back muscles with their hair.
Yeah. And then in terms of leanness for figure, you do want to have, you know, some muscle separation a little bit more than bikini, but you don't want to be as like striated as women's physique, which is going to be the next division up. So you are still really fucking lean, excuse my language.
Really lean.
But again, there is a fine line of that leanness so that you aren't docked points, because you can be docked points if you are too lean in any division, really.
In any division, which is crazy, and why, honestly, having a coach, you know, and we'll have a whole episode on like having a coach and the benefit of that, but like why having a coach can be so beneficial, because it is so hard to see yourself for exactly where you're at. And when it comes down to it, it's like too lean and you're getting docked points, not lean enough and you're getting docked points. You have to be in that sweet spot in every division. And so having that, you know, coach's eye who knows where you should be can be so, so beneficial. It's not just, you know, having somebody diet you.
Yeah. It's very, very in depth.
So real quick, I think we should back up and go to wellness. Wellness is a little bit new, and it's kind of a weird, like, I don't know where to place it 100% in terms. I would say it probably is more so in between like bikini and figure, right? It's the same level of leanness as bikini more so, but there is a pretty decent disproportion between the muscular development in the upper and the lower body. So wellness girls have a lot more muscle density in their legs than in their upper body, but that doesn't mean that they don't have the upper body developed either. They do. It's just the proportion is significantly different. And something that I see a lot is a lot of people who hold body fat in their legs thinking, oh, my legs are bigger, I must be wellness. But the thing is that if you've never been that level of lean and you've never dieted down that far, odds are it really is just body fat that you're holding in your legs. You have to kind of purposefully go into wellness. You know, most people don't just accidentally have that ridiculous amount of leg tissue.
Very genetic.
Yes, it could be very genetic. And it also is just something you have to train really hard for. You know, we have friends who train for wellness and they train legs heavy 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, if you want to see wellness, go follow Liz.
Just we'll answer questions later, but I've gotten personally a lot of questions about like, oh, do you think I'd be better for bikini or wellness? 9 times out of 10, you are going to be more suited for bikini, but my best piece of advice is just start dieting down. And when you get to that level of lean, you'll know, you know what I mean? Yeah. The prep for it is not going to really be much different, as far as like dieting and cardio goes. So you can kind of just let your body get that lean and see if you actually have as much muscle as you think you do, because women hormonally, we just hold body fat in our legs. Like for me, I hold way more body fat in my legs. Same. Absolutely. Am I not wellness?
Yeah. My legs, like, no.
It's actually a sign of good hormonal health to hold body fat in your legs. Pro tip, little fun fact, but most of us women do. And just because you hold body fat in your legs, I can guarantee you, it does not necessarily mean you're just wellness. You probably are. And I hate to say probably, cause I don't know who I'm talking to, but unless you've purposefully built your legs up significantly more than your upper body, you're probably bikini.
Yeah. And we can like bring some competitors on from different divisions, kind of just like talk about styles of training, things like that.
Yeah, we should bring Liz on, because Liz is such a good example of purposefully training for the wellness division. You know, like I said, Liz trains upper body once a week. And last time I talked to her about it, she literally trains push 1 week and pull the next week. And then she trains legs as often as she can recover from. She's training legs because it's the amount of muscle tissue you need to be competitive in wellness is so much more than you think it is.
You gotta push heavyweight and you gotta eat.
Yeah.
And then women's physique is going to be one of the other women's divisions. I feel like it's kind of like men's classic in terms of they have a routine.
Don't have to wear heels.
Yeah, they don't have to wear heels, which is, I'm
jealous. That's what I'm most salty about.
So they have a routine. It's not going to be like the fitness routine where it's like super upbeat, like gymnastics type. It's going to be kind of like that classic, like that classic bodybuilding that you think of. It's like the flow, the poise, showing off. They have mandatory poses as well. And this is going to be, you know, one step below bodybuilding. It's going to be the leanest women's division. And I think, like, at least what I'm seeing now, like women's physique, they aren't like, I mean, at the NAT regional level, which we should probably like clarify regional and national level after this.
I just wanted to go through the divisions first.
But in terms of like muscle density, they do have a lot of muscle density, but I think a lot of it is also, you know, shape, symmetry, proportions, and leanness. So again,
every division is how do you present it? You know, at the end of the day, every single division is what do you do with the physique you have? And with them, you know, having that routine, it also, you know, comes into play.
So if you guys ever want to get more in-depth information about the different divisions, you can just go to npcnewsonline.com and they have all of the judging criteria. They have, you know, pictures that represent each division. So you can kind of get a visual representation, because obviously on a podcast, we can't really show that. We'll put the link to that in the show notes so that you can go ahead and see it for yourself. But going into like shows themselves, so with bodybuilding, there's going to be different levels that you compete at. So there's going to be the regional level, there's going to be the national level, and there's going to be the pro level. So regional level is exactly what you think it is regional. So these are going to be the most like common shows that you see within like your like neighborhood. And at the regional level, the judging criteria is going to be a little bit different than the national level. So before you can compete at the national level, that came out weird, national level, you have to place well in your class at the regional level. And within the regional level, there's going to be even more classes divided up. So there is true novice, which means you have never competed before, like ever. Very first show. So you can only do that once. And then there is novice, which means you've competed before, but you've never won.
And if it's your first show, you can also do novice.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do that.
Yeah, you can do true novice. You can do multiple classes if they have them. So you can do true novice and novice in the same show. So that's why you'll see a lot of people who compete, they'll do multiple classes just to get more stage time, more chances to, for the judges to see them, more chances to get some hardware. But novice means, you know, you've competed before, but you've never like won first. And then there is the open division, which is the open division that anyone can enter into. And you can only qualify for nationals in the open division. And they've changed the rules a little bit. Before it was like top two.
Yeah. And I think it's honestly just because of COVID. I can see it going back. It's weird right now. It's like top five qualify for nationals right now, but I don't see that being a forever thing.
Yeah. So typically it's like top two in the open. So if you win top two in the open class, you are then qualified to compete at the national level. Then they also have master's classes, which is for people who are there's like masters 35 and up. So if you are
35, just so sad, 35 is not masters.
Yeah. So if you're 35 or older, you can compete in masters. And they have like 45 older. Some shows have like 55 plus, which is wild.
I love watching the masters. Like the older, it is just so cool to see. Like, shoot, you need some motivation. Like, go watch the masters divisions.
Yeah.
So good most of the time.
Wild. So that is kind of across the board for all of the divisions. So fit or bikini, figure, all of that. Actually, fun fact, my show did not have a novice division. So I literally only did open, but it saved me money. So yeah.
So that's something to also note, that each division that you sign up for is, generally speaking, at least at the regional level, going to be around $100. So we'll get a little bit more into finances, but competing is very expensive, and we'll talk about that. But each division that you sign up is going to be about $100, give or take, depending on the show. So if you do true novice and open, you're out at least $300 literally just to be in the class.
Yeah, so I kind of lucked out there, but it's also less chances for me to get on stage. So I got one shot at glory.
Yeah, and it's nice to get the extra feedback too. So when we talk about like more chances to be on stage, it's A, you know, a comfort thing and getting the experience, but B, the more time you're in front of the judges, the more feedback you can get from them about what you need to improve upon to just come back better.
Yeah, and then the national level is kind of like, it's like the middle ground before obviously you get to the pro level. So before you can become a pro, you have to compete at the national level. So national level shows, there are how many throughout the year? Like eight?
Nine? Yeah, I honestly don't know. There's definitely not as many. I mean, like at least in Florida and Texas too, there's regional shows every weekend. Like,
so regional shows are going to be a lot more popular than, and national shows are, there's like eight or so throughout the year. The first one is usually in like, I think March it was, or something like that.
This year is kind of weird, but
yeah. But at the national level, the divisions are still the same in terms of like bikini, figure, women's physique, fitness, etc. The height classes are still the same. They'll probably be a little bit bigger because national shows are bigger. Entry fees for national shows are more expensive because they are bigger shows. But at the national level, you have to get, it's still first or second, right, to earn your pro card, or is it just first?
It just depends on the show. So I know this weekend at Universe, that's what's this weekend, right?
Yeah.
It's the top two. Yeah. So, but that's not always the case. I know last weekend or two weekends ago, it was top one.
Yeah. So either first or second in your class, you will receive your pro card. So at the national level, because also at the regional level, depending on the size of your class, but there's going to be call outs. So after they get everybody to do their routine and doing things like that, during pre-judging, which is like the first judging opportunity for the competitors, there'll be call outs. So they'll call out like top eight and then compare them, and they'll call up the next like eight, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be like first call out, second call out, third call out. So typically if you are in first call outs, and if you are in like the middle of first callouts, which they'll call like center stage or dead center. That mm-hmm. typically means you are in like the first or second spot, and you are in the running for getting your pro card.
Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, because I'm sure people who've never competed have heard of like first callouts or, you know, splitting yeah. center or holding center, and are like, what the heck does that mean? Yeah. It basically means that you're doing well. You never know until finals, but it basically means they judged you well at prejudging, where something to also note is, you know, the difference between prejudging and finals. So mm-hmm. again, we can kind of get into like how shows are run, but a lot of the decisions are made at prejudging, and then, you know, finals, most of the time the judges have already kind of made their decision up, unless you come back and you just look completely different.
Because I said, especially for the women's division, because with the men, like especially at men's bodybuilding, like your physique can change a decent amount between prejudging and finals. So they can change their decision at finals, depending on how you look like.
So that's why it's like, people don't just go and like go ham on the food or the water, you know, between prejudging and finals, because even though, yeah, the judges have pretty much made their minds up, if you come back and you're like super bloated and watery, they're not going to hand you a first place medal. They're going to be like, what happened here?
Yeah. So prejudging is usually in the morning, or like they call it like the morning show. And then finals is in the evening. So yeah, prejudging is when you do your full routine, if you have a routine. Most have a routine. And then that's when they do their comparisons as well for each division. And during the comparisons is when they'll like move competitors around, compare your physique to someone else's physique, and see who has the best package for that day. And whoever they basically like the most is going to be the person who is closer to the center, and the closer to the center that you are, the closer to first place that you are. So your goal is to be in that center spot, or at least like splitting center if it's an even number of competitors on stage, for a higher chance that you are in that top spot.
Yeah. So I guess then obviously if you go pro, then you would only, once you go pro, you are only allowed to compete in pro shows. So pros aren't allowed to come to the regional shows and compete against, you know, the amateurs anymore. Like, so that
it's like an NBA player trying to play at a high school game.
Yeah, they're not allowed to do that anymore. So once you go pro, you will only compete in pro shows. And that is kind of where you're going to be competing for money. At all of the other levels, you don't win money. You don't win money at like national shows. You just win your pro card, right?
I think some have like a small.
Some do.
Yeah, I think.
Colin,
I think they do.
Well, I know the pro shows are where though you're like really competing with the, you know, goal to win money, which obviously you're a professional athlete then, you know?
Yeah. And also with the pro shows, can get points to qualify for the Olympia, which is like the Super Bowl of bodybuilding, as people have called it.
A lot of people's goal will be to be on that Olympia stage. If you ask a lot of competitors, what is your like end goal? Win the Olympia. You know, that's like, there's nothing more you could do.
top. So
yeah.
How, like the points for the Olympia, don't ask me it. I don't know all of that.
never pertain to us. So.
We are not quite there yet. Yeah. But just know that in order to compete at the Olympia, you have to qualify. You have to earn a certain amount of points. And you can only do that by competing in pro level shows.
Yeah. So that is just kind of a general overview of competing. We kind of talked a little bit about prejudging and finals. The thing with shows though, is you got to realize every show is going to be run a little bit differently. There's going to be some shows that do all of the men first and then all of the women. So like men will go through their prejudging and their finals, and then women will go through prejudging and finals. I've seen shows where women didn't even step on stage until 5, you know?
Yeah. And then after shows, they can be 2 days where they'll have like days. Men on one day or women on one day, or they'll do like bikini on one day, figure on one day. All the shows are going to be run a little bit differently. depending on the show.
Yeah. So John is competing at a national show. You can come over here and explain that. But his show is like 4 days long.
Okay. So North Americans, there's different shows, like North Americans and Amateur Olympia.
Yeah. So, Amateur Olympia is a long show.
So the Amateur Olympia, it's not the top one or two of each class. It's the top three of every division. So you go to the overall, and then the top three in the overall get their pro card.
Okay.
I just looked that up yesterday. But North Americans, the top two in each division, and it's a 4 day show. So it's classic physique, men's physique, and then the next day is bodybuilding, I think. I'm not sure. And then it goes females. So it's Wednesday. It might be 3 days, actually.
Yeah, so it's not even just like men one day, women the next. It's literally like specific divisions today, these tomorrow.
Men's physique and classic physique, they're such big divisions.
Yeah, they're huge.
At national level.
Yeah, so every show is a little bit different. So like, obviously, if you're going to be competing, you know, look that up ahead of time. Don't just assume that your show is at 9 a.m. on a Saturday, because it might not be.
Yeah, but just in general, show days are very long. Very early to, you know, if you're a female, get your makeup done, get tan done.
And as much as you can like follow a schedule, you never 100% know if it's going to happen like that. You know, this last weekend we were at the Branch Warren. And I mean, I got over to my client Hannah's hotel room at 7 a.m. and they didn't end up getting off stage from finals until like 11 p.m. It was a like show started at 9, ended at 11. It was a long, long show, but that's not how long every single show is.
You gotta kind of tell when you're going to be on stage.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. You'll know when you're going to be on stage, you know,
just things, life happens, like things
just roll with the punches,
go with it. Some shows are run more efficiently than others. Some shows, like, again, depending on how many people show up, like certain classes can go faster than other classes. So like if there's a smaller class, like obviously that judging is going to go by faster than if there's a bigger class. So you just kind of got to go in. And just
they'll give you a schedule when you check in. And honestly, your best bet is just going to be to get ready and then be over at the venue. If the venue, like if they're not having the show in your hotel, sometimes they'll have the actual show in the hotel, which makes it really easy. But your best bet is to just get ready and just get over there. You don't really need to, like, there's no reason to not be at the venue, you know, as soon as your hair and your makeup and everything is done. Just go be there, chill, bring a blanket. It's really cold usually backstage. Bring a blanket, bring, you know, whatever food you need, bring your water, whatever you need, just bring it with you and just go chill, bring a book, bring some music.
We can go over show day essentials in another podcast.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Maybe when I'm there with you.
Yeah, we could literally just have Celeste packing for her show day and pull a podcast out. She packs and puts things into her bag.
That'd be a fun one.
Because you're gonna be here, you're gonna come stay with me before the show, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna fly out Wednesday.
Woo! Yeah, so she'll be here real time. We'll be moved into the house, we'll have the podcast room, and we can just literally pack and chat.
Pack and chat, that'll be a fun one. So we kind of talked a lot about the like general overview of the divisions, the classes, what are the classes judged on, amateur versus nationals, how shows are run. So
I think we should hold off on talking too much about the finances until our next one. Our next podcast we're going to do is going to be basically how to know you're ready to start prep. And honestly, being in a financially sound place is a really, really big part of knowing that you're ready to start a prep. So we can cover that. But I was thinking we could just do this like quick little Q&A of all the questions that we got that really pertained. I kind of split up the questions into like which podcast they'd make sense with.
Yeah.
And just kind of answer these real quick. I know you got a couple too.
Yeah. So we can just go back and forth, all of that good stuff. So want to start us off?
All right. So first one, we'll start off with a banger. someone said, I heard you have to work out 3 times a day. Is that true?
This is a, it depends question, because
and not just person to person, but also where you're at in prep.
Yeah. Cause like at the beginning of prep, ideally you're not going to be doing a bunch of cardio and things like that, but the preparation for stage is going to be more extreme than just like a regular lifestyle diet. For
time-consuming.
For a majority of people, you are going to have to do a decent amount of cardio, and you know, eat not a decent amount of food. Again, everyone's going to be different, but no matter like who you are, prep is hard, and everyone's heart is different, so that's something to understand. But if like towards the end of prep, like the tail end of prep, you might be doing 2 sessions of cardio a day. That's where I'm at right now. So I have a session in the morning and I have a session after my workout. So right now I go to the gym 2 a day. If it's a particularly hard day, I might do my second round of cardio a little bit later. So if that's the case, then I'll go to the gym 3 times a day. Or if I want to pose for that day, then I'll go back and pose later on. So it kind of just depends. So you can end up going 3 times a day, but it's not like everybody does that. It just depends on where you're at and how, you know, where your protocols are at.
Yeah. And what your life looks like too, you know. I know in an ideal world, all of us would be able to do our cardio during one session and then train in another session, because you're going to be able to feel as good as possible going into each of those separate variables, right? Yeah. When I prepped, I'll be honest, I did it all in one go. So I went to the gym 2 a day, I trained, and then I did my cardio right after. Was that necessarily ideal, like optimal? Maybe not. But at the same time, it worked. I got conditioned. So it depends. It depends on the person. It depends on what your life looks like. You know, if you are having to be at work at 5 a.m., fasted cardio might just be kind of out of the question. And maybe you really just have to go to the gym 1 time and get it all in. Maybe you break it up and do your cardio at lunch. It just depends on you and your life and your schedule and what all of that comes into, you know. If you want to pose at home, you can pose at home. If you want to pose at the gym, you can pose at the gym. Some people like to go to the gym just to like be focused. So it all depends. But at the end of the day, I'd say 99% of people are going to have to train and do cardio and pose almost every single day.
Yeah. So again, yeah, the number of times that you go to the gym is going to depend, but you're going to be at the gym a decent amount.
There's no way around that. You can't not train.
Yeah.
And compete in a bodybuilding show. Just like, that doesn't even make sense.
If only.
Yeah. You still get rest days though. I think that's like a really big misconception that like you don't ever rest while you're in prep. You do have to rest. Now what your rest looks like week to week may be different. But you do still have, you know, days off from training and hopefully days off from cardio, at least sometimes.
Yeah. Like right now I train 5 days a week, but I have 6 days of cardio. So yeah. I have one like full rest day, and then I have one cardio only day.
Yeah. And again, it ebbs and flows. You know, I was kind of the same for a long part of my prep. Towards the end of my prep, the last like month, I did cardio 7 days a week. So there wasn't ever like a full day off, but I didn't train all 7 of those days. I trained 5. I never trained more than 5 days a week.
Yeah. So that.
All right. You want to ask?
Okay, so mine kind of dives into the more like personal side for us in terms of like our competing journey. So question is, why did you choose to compete, or like what got you into competing?
Yeah, so, I think that's such a hard one. I mean, yeah.
It's like a very long question. I feel like, I think we kind of talked about, or maybe we did in like our very, very first podcast when we like talked about ourselves.
Yeah.
But for me, I come from a background of sports. So I played volleyball literally my entire life, from middle school through college. And after I graduated, or after I finished my senior season, I've been like following different bodybuilders, or different competitors, I should say, through my college career. And I was like, oh, that looks interesting. That looks fun. This was before I like knew a lot about it. but that was when I hired Nick, with like the faint idea of wanting to compete, just because I wanted something to work towards, something that was going to be more of like a individual type of sport, because obviously volleyball is a team sport. So a lot of our success is based on team efforts and things like that. And I wanted something that was, you know, just for me, something that the work is just a reflection of my work. And I, as I got more into the lifestyle, was working with my coach, I fell in love with the lifestyle and fell in love with, you know, the lifestyle aspect of competition, which we can talk about before or talk about in our next podcast in terms of how you know you're ready, right? Because I think you should be living you should be living this lifestyle before you decide to compete. But I just wanted more competition in my life. I wanted to continue to be an athlete, continue to train, and have something that was going to continue to push me to be better.
Yeah, I like that. Like your why is a lot more thought out than mine. I'll be perfectly honest. I've just always been like lifestyle. You know, I never thought I would compete. Like, and I do very not get that. What?
But you were very adamant about that when I first met you.
I was very adamant about the fact that I would never compete, but I was at this point, honestly, where I was eating so much food. I was eating so much food and I was like pretty damn lean doing it. And Nick just kind of kept being like, do you want to compete? Like, you're in a really good place to compete if you want to try to compete. And I had been kind of like, you know, we'd been talking about me becoming, you know, like a second prep coach on the team. And I personally just never felt comfortable being like, yeah, I'm going to prep people, when I had never prepped myself. So a really big reason behind me competing the first time was like, okay, well, I would like to dabble in this like competition prep coaching, but I'm not about to do that without ever having competed myself. So that was a really big impact on me of just like, hey, I'm never going to like put someone through something I've never put myself through. Plus living with, John, moving in with John and I started dating right when he started prep. So that was kind of my first time ever seeing somebody like really real time in person competing. And it was really cool to just watch him give his all to something and like the pride and excitement that he felt like being on stage. And I was kind of like, I want to experience that, you know, I'm pretty disciplined and dedicated already. I'm in a good spot. Like, I like the challenge to challenge myself and just kind of have something to work towards. So as much as I never thought I would do it, I ended up being like, let's go, let's just freaking try it. And I ended up really enjoying the experience. I mean, you know, obviously there's challenges. Like,
lows, which, again, we will get to those in this series.
But it was a really, really cool learning experience for me. Just not even just about prep, but about like myself.
Yeah. You learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah. So let's end with, what is the hardest part and what is your favorite part of prep?
So for me, I think hardest part is feeling like, not like so much in the beginning, but towards the end when you are getting significantly leaner and you are just tired a lot, you start to, again, this doesn't go for everybody, this is just like personal.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. I know exactly what you're going to say because it's mine too.
Yeah, you just start to feel just very apathetic towards
everything
that's not, literally everything.
Yeah, that's not getting you closer to show.
Yeah, so it becomes a lot harder to show up in your relationships. It becomes a lot harder to show up in your work. You start to feel guilty for not being able to show up in your relationships and show up in your work, because competition prep takes a lot out of you physically, mentally, emotionally, freaking spiritually. And again, just as your energy levels start to drop and you're just not able, you just don't necessarily feel like yourself. Your hormones start to get all kinds of wacky. So you have these like emotional highs and lows. So just navigating that. And that's why it's so, so important to have a really good support system through a competition prep, because when you are, you know, struggling and feeling those apathetic thoughts, you need people who are going to like understand, like, hey, I'm going through this, you know, hard thing, which, you know, competition prep is a choice. And that's, you know, something that you are voluntarily choosing to put yourself through. So you don't necessarily, you know, want to let that affect your other obligations, but to a degree it is going to. So just navigating that and handling that is probably the hardest part for me.
Yeah, we literally were like texting about this earlier this week because
during one of my many mental breakdowns.
I text you that day. So it's not like you were just like bugging me or anything, but no, I feel the same way. Like I've never experienced so much like insecurity about my personality. Like I was so insecure about my personality because I knew I just wasn't showing up as the person that I want to show up as. You just don't have it in you. And it's really strange to feel like your personality is kind of slipping away. That was definitely the hardest part for me. I mean, obviously going to the gym and training and stuff when you don't feel good is hard, but again, you choose that and you know, you choose that. Not eating when you're hungry is hard, but you choose that and you know you choose that. But feeling like you're losing part of yourself is kind of a hard thing to take.
Yeah, because both of us are like outgoing people. Like we're fun people. We goof around. We're weird. We're awkward. So when you don't have the energy to show up like that, you just don't feel like yourself. And yeah, like you said, it's just an insecure, like it's, you feel very insecure about your just life. So that's the hardest part. And I think we can agree that's both of our hardest part. Favorite part, I would say, is just working towards something and having that pride of showing up every single day, giving your 100% effort. And, you know,
you learn that you're so much stronger than you ever thought. And there's really no other way to learn how freaking strong you are than to put yourself through misery every day.
Yeah. And then come show day, that pride just, regardless of what happens, you know, you gave 100% to your prep, and that just is an indescribable feeling. So I think that's my favorite part. I think we can agree that that's both of our favorite parts.
Yeah. The self-growth, you can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah. So I think we've dabbled enough in the, you know, general overview of competition, and you know, this is going to be, like we said, a series, so we're gonna be talking a lot more about this. So don't worry if we didn't cover a topic that you wanted us to talk about, we will. But
let us know though, for sure. Let us know, message us, let us know, and share this podcast. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. I know it's been something a lot of people have been curious about.
Yeah, but that's going to wrap it up for now. So as always, give us a 5-star review, leave us a, you know, nice little comment, and stay tuned for the next episode of this series.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.